fellow cosplayers, and welcome aboard the Joy of Trek, a pretend podcast exploring the seedy bars and maternal clinics, yikes, of Star Trek,
all of it.
I'm Cocky.
I'm Kay.
And being euthanized by Seven is your chief engineer, Greg.
Oh dear.
Together, we're on a mission through the holographic study of Star Trek to find the psychiatric emergency in every cyberneticist.
Nice.
And the excellent in every episode.
Even the Borg implants.
Because every episode must be someone's failure, and it might as well be us.
It must be somebody's favorite also, but totally fine.
What did I say?
You said failure.
Oh.
But so sniff your dinner and or lovers and join us as we dual wield into
the joy of Trek.
And we are joined
by our little pod kitten.
By a little pod kitten who needs some emergency lap time. You're going to be the emergency medical hologram for her.
And I've lost part of my audio.
I'll give your stuff a jiggle. This is all still in the episode. Here you go. Are you back yet?
Yeah, I think it sounds better. Yes,
okay,
sorry.
Good.
Our little pod kitten went to the vet today to get spayed, and she's a little bit woozy still. And she clearly wants a little bit of daddy's lap time.
Yeah. I had a little lap time with her earlier, and then you correctly deduced that it was the heat that she wanted. Oh, yep, those little kitty claws. So, yeah, the listeners at home, we are dealing with a post-op pussycat.
Yes.
Who needs some extra attention, which we are very happy to provide. So there may be a little bit of, maybe a little bit of an unusual episode
yes.
for those who aren't members of our Patreon and thus haven't heard us deal with this all the f***ing time during the special episodes. Hello, everybody.
So this episode was, actually, we haven't told us which episode it was going to be yet.
Oh, yes. Welcome to Picard, Season 1, Episode 5, Stardust City Rag.
Oh, yes. Hello, my baby. Hello, my darling. Hello, my... Oh, God, why can't I think of the name of the...
Ragtime gal.
Well, I know that, but I was going to try to get the name of the Romulan
Honey,
Secret Service in there.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, I'll live narrate. She's a very climby kitty.
She is
the defendant, and while she's wearing her post-op smock, apparently they don't do a cone of shame anymore
I guess it depends, like for
fussing.
But
with
yeah, she's wearing
stitches.
A very cute little romper.
God.
What?
I don't know how this came up, but 2 days ago, I was thinking like, what kind of a if I were ever to do Star Trek cosplay. Chief, pay attention, because this may be relevant to you. What would I want? And I'm like, okay, all those uniforms look really, really great, but I am prone to overheating.
Oh, yes.
So I do need something where I can, that's why I like my button-up shirts. You can open up the collar, roll up the sleeves. And I landed on sort of like a Star Trek Enterprise. Here, those jumpsuits?
Yes.
That as a romper.
Because, okay.
Yeah, right? Zip off sleeve, zip off pants, and the rest is
How about the... if you want to, take cautious, you might, what about the scant? Wouldn't that work for you?
Oh, I don't know that I've got the knees for it, honestly. I'm a little... But I certainly don't have the boots.
Well, that can be... if you're doing cosplay, then you can, you're going to have to scant. You might as well get the boots while you're at it.
Oh, then I'll be scantily clad. Anyway.
Oh.
hey.
Look, Cocky, if the fear of you cosplaying is you having to get boots, then, oh boy, we can have a talk because I can help you get some boots. You know damn well how many boots I have in my closet, Cocky.
So we're in Season 1 of Star Trek Picard. Now, we've done a Season 1 episode of Star Trek Picard before.
And
was Nepenthe, which is one of seven, which comes after this one.
So this is two episodes...
Prior,
yes.
Yeah, and for those of you who haven't seen it yet... And who didn't hear our content warning last time, it starts off pretty rough.
Yes.
And actually the ending is also pretty rough.
It is, yes. It's a pretty tough scene. Something that I wouldn't have thought would have been much of a Star Trek thing. But I guess they were kind of for a little edgier, grimmer Star Trek here.
Well, the showrunner, Michael Chabon, is a novelist at heart. And that's how he wanted to approach this series. And so, there's a lot... bigger stakes and much more personal pain as we examine the consequences of a life like Picard's and the world that they live in. When you get punched, it hurts, and when you get cut, it scars.
Yeah,
and those stay with you. So thematically, I really appreciate the daring, but it is very tough to watch.
Mm. So this episode was recommended to us by Lauren Rivers.
Yay!
This episode was just so much fun. Not only did we get to see Picard really ham it up in his undercover disguise, I've got some comments on that, but we got to see Seven of Nine proper for the first time since Voyager ended.
Yay!
It was so exciting to see these characters on screen together, and that alone was just so exciting.
Hey, yeah. Thank you, Lauren. It's got a bit of a theme. Like, with Nepenthe, it was also about, like, seeing our old friends together, which we totally understand. But it's interesting that she and I both remember this episode being a lot of fun, because it's got some really, really fun bits.
Oh, yeah.
And you kind of got a
really, really dark bits.
Yeah, yeah. I found it easier to watch the second time around, of course.
Okay.
Yeah. Knowing that it was coming.
Yeah, I mean, they do a fairly good job of more implying than actually showing. Okay, there's the bit with the eye, but again, the especially bloody bits are not shown.
Do you want to dump warp core for this episode?
Ooh, if anything, then, like, okay, so...
Okay,
there's one thing that just jumped to mind. So, like, they needed a transporter booster to be able to transport out through their shields.
Yes.
But back in didn't seem to be a problem.
Huh.
Because, like, you can see the captain put the thing back on the console after they get beamed back aboard, and then you see Seven pick it up again, and as soon as everybody lifts their heels, she uses it to transport back into the club. So that's about the only thing that I have to nitpick on this.
Okay. I mean, maybe it works fine once you've been in and out.
Time, you know the modulation of the shield frequency and...
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you can always have one more than I do. if anything, like, my complaint is that there was not enough cosplaying.
Kaki, I've never seen this side of you before, but I like the side of you. Yes, yes, more cosplaying. Yes.
Okay, yeah. I mean, all of the main cast were. With the exception of Seven.
Yeah. And Raffi?
Hang on. Oh, Raffi, yeah. Yeah, but Raffi she wasn't in on the heist.
Okay, let's dive into the episode then. Let's hit the...
hit the whoosh button.
We didn't let Shaxx speak, even though we did dump the warp core. Yes,
Shaxx is who of the...
Shaxx is from Lower Decks.
Oh, Lower Decks, right, yes. Oh, the grumpy guy.
The hunky Bajoran security officer.
Right, yes, the dead one. Or the ex-dead one.
I understand why you call him the grumpy one, but he is dating Dr. Tiana. And then when you look at if you have the two of them standing in front of you, which one do you think is the grumpy one?
Fair. Or maybe that's who our little pot kitten is cosplaying. She's like Dr. Tiana in a red officer's uniform.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it does look a bit... Oh, honestly, it looks like a little bit like a Hogwarts sort of turtleneck.
Absolutely. Yes, it does a bit.
It's a lovely crimson, the gold embroidered logo on it. And
she is now shouldering my notes aside because apparently they were exactly where she needs to be.
Yeah, well, at the moment she gets her way, right?
Yes, of course.
So we start with a helpful previously on.
Yes.
Which summarizes the story so far. We see that it's all about a synthetic life is why Picard has sought out Dr. Agnes Jurati. She's a cyberneticist.
Right. Married to the other one.
Bruce Maddox. Now,
were they married? I mean, I got the impression from what they were, at least they were romantically involved.
Yeah.
From the cookies baking.
Affianced.
Yes.
Both of them experts in the currently forbidden field of artificial life, synthetic life.
Positonic matrices.
Yes.
After the Mars uprising which from this episode, I mean, like I said, I haven't watched much of Picard. So at least now I got the impression that there are conspiracies are abound and something is being swept under the rug. And what happened on Mars was not what it seemed to be. Yes, there is.
One of the La Sirena crew certainly seemed to think so.
Yes.
We see how Picard left his chateau.
Yeah.
He was advised by his Romulan friends that he needed a crew, and he was already putting one together. And
coincidentally.
They're a bunch of ragtags, aren't they?
So we have Rios.
Yep.
We have
Rafaela. Yeah.
And then we have
Agnes.
Agnes, that's the cyberneticist.
She's the cyberneticist. And then we have Elnor.
Oh, yes, Space Legolas.
Yes, exactly. Whose name, if you translate it from Quenya, means a Heavenly Body Voyage or Star Trek.
Yes. And he was from an order who always speak their minds.
Very good.
Yes.
Absolute candor. It's a group of warrior nuns who, in a rare exception, adopted an orphan boy.
Yes, yeah.
But yeah, he's been raised with complete honesty.
Which is hilarious, which is fantastic. And like everybody's like walking around and they're planning the heist, and then he's like, "Oh, we're lying," and it takes him ages to figure out.
Pretending, yes.
Yes.
Because if nobody says it, then he's not looking for it.
Exactly, and it takes him forever to realize. Oh wait, we're being dishonest here. That's at least we're lying about our appearances and who we are.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to talking about that scene. But before we get there, we have to chew through this opening, which actually starts with a really beautiful image of a planet called Vegesen.
Yes.
In the Hypatia system.
For those that don't know, that means forgotten or forgetting in German.
I mean, as a noun,
yes.
Like vergetenis in Dutch, like yeah. It would be like oblivion.
Could be, yes.
Right?
I think that's vergetelnis, but...
I mean, not yeah. like the void, but like no. destruction unto utter absence.
Mm.
It's a beautiful, beautiful image. Oh, I had some trivia about that. This image, yes, the Vergessen Planet descent scene pays tribute to the Huygensprobe. Hey, speaking of Dutch oh, yes. Germanic word.
Yeah.
Landing on Jupiter's moon Titan, which mimics Earth-like landscapes carved by liquid methane in the Huygens mission by ESA.
The Seven Domes.
Where, I mean, it's basically hostile.
Quite. So it starts with a guy on table being torn apart, having his Borg parts taken out.
Yep. There's a very cheerful woman with various instruments and a blood-spattered surgical gown.
Yes.
Extracting his eye and cutting it off. And
Where's your cortical node, buddy?
Yeah, that sort of casualness. Yeah. Also, hey, Chief, stand by to correct me on this. I think he doesn't have one. I think he donated his to Seven.
My cortical node is operational. I want you to remove it and give it to Seven.
Like she had a breakdown, and she needed essentially a donor part.
Oh, okay.
Being young, he figured that he could live with it.
I emerged from my maturation chamber before I was fully assimilated. As a result, my physiology is less dependent on my implant.
That drill bit that they're using, that's actually used for widening holes.
Does it glow like that?
No, not usually.
Okay. But
you could just buy one of those in any hardware store, pretty much.
Hey, there's still a great way of making holes. Like,
absolutely.
You don't need lasers.
Absolutely.
Lasers have a lot of disadvantages.
But just as she's about to drill into him, there is a sudden sound and someone gets bejazzled.
Yeah, she calls out the name Bejazel.
Yeah.
Phaser, phaser, phaser. She goes down. And it's Seven of Nine.
Yes. Whom we just saw arrive on board Picard's ship.
Yeah.
In the scene before this. But yeah, there's a little flashback to see what happened. After the torture, we get a very emotional scene. I had his name written down somewhere.
Icheb.
Icheb, yes. I had a little bit of trivia about it. I came across a bit of trivia about that.
Oh, yeah.
This was placed by the third actor. Yes.
Oh,
Casey
yes.
King is the third actor to portray Icheb.
Yes, originally Manu Intriami,
very
I think
good.
Is the
yes.
pronunciation.
Who was really upset that they didn't ask him to come back.
Yeah,
to
well,
reprise the role. Yeah.
He's been a bit shitty for a while.
He
was very, very shitty when Anthony Rapp came out about the sexual abuse that he'd suffered at the hands of Kevin Spacey when he was younger.
Oh, yes.
He was very not cool about that. I've seen him do a lot of not cool things. He was not beloved by Jerry Ryan.
I guess that
either.
Explains why he was not invited back.
I mean, maybe it's as simple as the age, because this is like this is
clearly
a flashback.
Yeah.
Manu is in his 40s. He's supposed to be in his late 20s in this scene. Maybe
right.
it's just an
yeah,
age thing.
Okay, possible, yeah. What is his original species?
Oh, Chief.
That would be a Brunelli, which is a Delta Quadrant species.
Oh, right, of course, yes.
so not one of the we're very familiar with.
It's all right. You'll be all right.
Go.
Not without you, Icheb.
It's gruesome. Apparently, like, he's so far gone, he can't be rescued. And
yeah, and Seven ends up mercy killing him.
I'm so sorry. My child.
She calls him my child.
Yes, she comes back to that later, that he was like a son to her. And she is holding a grudge.
Yes, which she nurtures, understandably, for quite a while.
Yeah. Cut to a lovely piano recital in a mostly empty bar.
Yeah, there's a fantastic pianist. And this...
And a very peculiar piano, but okay.
What's so peculiar about it?
Well, for a start, it must be a synthesizer. And then
yeah.
super long keys, which go way past the black keys.
I wonder, I mean, she's a little person, the actress is, so maybe for smaller hands, that's more accessible?
Possible.
I've been told the stereotype that all the famous pianists, you know, Rachmaninoff, had gigantic hands, giving them enormous range that is
right.
not easy to reproduce by...
I don't think it's like Rachmaninoff had much of a more range than an octave plus two or three, which is fairly normal.
Oh, I thought he was like the Jimi Hendrix
pianist. No, it's kind of like it's kind of rumored like that. There's a hilarious sketch by a Japanese or Korean musician, I think, who starts sitting and playing Rachmaninoff, and he goes like, All right, yeah, Rachmaninoff, he used to have big hands. I small hands, but only hands small.
And then he proceeds, it's a good little skit.
And then he proceeds to play it, and there's this guy standing beside him who occasionally hands him this wooden rail with knobs on it, which he uses to play
rakes.
Massive chords, to the, which he then tosses back, and the guy catches them, and he hands him the next one when he needs it.
It's brilliant. Chief, could you please put it in the show notes? It's such a delight.
Yeah, Kage, that'll be in the show notes. As far as Rachmaninoff goes, and specifically his hands, he could do what's a 13th on a piano, which is about 24 keys that he could put his hand without stretching it like too much to be able to reach. Like, the reach on his hand was insane. From the people I know that have played piano, trying to play a Rachmaninoff thing, it can be a nightmare sometimes because you just cannot do it all on your own.
Oh, does the nightclub have a name?
I don't know.
It's not the Red Bullion, is it?
It must be a J.J. Abrams club, considering the amount of lens flare we got here.
Okay, I've got to take a quick aside here. J.J. Abrams gets a lot of flack.
Yes.
Right? For
maybe
that's
where the lens flare comes. It comes from those big search beams cannons that they use to direct at airplanes when they're trying to shoot them with flak.
It comes from his director of photography. This was his idea that Abrams supported. And like, he also gets a lot of flack for the plot. No, there were writers who were responsible for all of that. But what's amazing is I've never seen him like be graceless or like deflecting that or frustrating. Like, he takes it all on the chin. Mm. I have such respect for him as a filmmaker. And yeah, it's like organic. It's intriguing. Lens flare has this effect on you, like, ooh, something to squint through. It makes space sort of feel alive. Because it's quite a boring scene. We've got an amazingly dressed woman and an amazingly made-up gentleman.
I've got written down such shoulder pieces.
Yeah, she does like that.
Yeah, it's like
a skin-tight bodysuit.
And then just like, yeah, massive shoulder pieces, which would make an American football player jealous.
It was the style of the time.
Yeah.
Flanked by two female guardians and one...
Yeah, seem to be bodyguards or something, as we learn later. A reptilianoid man comes walking in.
Mr. Vup.
Mr. Vux. Vup, yes.
He looks fantastic. He's a beta Anari.
And he growls cool. A lot. He stands there just quietly rumbling in the background occasionally.
Wait.
I was so delighted with Mr. Vup.
Tells them that Bruce Maddox has arrived.
She says, "Oh, kill him." Oh, wait, no, hang on.
I've got a better idea. Mm. Yes. She offers him a drink, Maddox, who looks a bit... worse for wear.
Now, this is the first time in the series that we're seeing Maddox. We have heard about him before, but now we finally get to see him.
Yeah.
And he, too, is an actor from a previous Star Trek series, or a character from a previous Star Trek series, played by a new actor.
Okay.
You remember Maddox because he was the one who wanted to take Data apart and took him to court for the right to do so, which fortunately the court sided in favor of a Starfleet officer's right to exist.
Yes.
Fantastic episode. You know, there was an extended edition of that.
Oh.
It's even better.
Is that one of the episodes where Dr. Polanski is being all anti-Data?
Oh, I don't think that's during her her reign.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry, Bajazel.
For what?
I don't know how I'm ever going to repay your loan.
They destroyed my lab. I'm never going to be able to repay my debt to you. And
they used some kind of molecular solvent.
Yeah.
Ugh.
There was literally nothing left, as he says. And she goes, oh, it's all right, darling.
Who's after you?
I think it was the Tal Shiar.
Oh, that does change things a little bit.
I hate making deals with the Romulans.
But fortunately, she'd already poisoned him with the Tranya.
Yeah, well, it's just knockout juice, I guess.
Yeah. Tranya was a drink enjoyed by... Oh, Chief, give me his name. From the original series, played by Clint Howard. A little baby Clint Howard played Baylock. That was his name.
All right, very good guy.
Thank you, Chief.
Well, okay, if you're just going to take away my job from me, I will just going to point out that Clint Howard did appear as an adult Baylock for the 2006 Comedy Central Roast of William Shatner. Still dressed the exact same way, and it's kind of hilarious to this grown man try and look like a little kid again, and it's just so silly.
Yeah, he falls to the ground, the glass shatters, we're treated to the beautiful opening titles of Star Trek.
Oh,
Picard.
Yes.
My goodness. The imagery in here is just absolutely captivating. I especially, like, my favorite part is this sort of isometric, perspectiveless view of the Borg cube. With this empty space inside of
with
it.
With this light shining out.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
What's your unshielded reactor?
Is it?
I don't know, I'm just making it up.
I appreciate you making things up.
And we are back on board the...
La Sirena.
La Sirena, that's the one.
Named for the first time on screen in this episode.
Oh, okay.
Picard is holding court in his chateau.
Right, yeah, I noticed that. He's literally got a holo suite.
Yep. That's what was provided for him, and he grudgingly accepted this exceptional luxury.
There's a little jab that he gets from Seven for that.
This place is something.
Not my idea.
But you like it enough to keep it.
Because she's been living on the rough. As we find out, after the collapse of the Romulan Star Empire, the neutral zone fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a whole region of space where there was essentially, like, no law.
Yes, and she's now part of the Mimbari Rangers.
Okay, sick Babylon 5 and La Shock reference there. She's a Fenris Ranger, an organization of essentially vigilantes, as Picard tries to jab at her. But yeah, like, she considers that a calling and a mission. She's got a lot in common with Elnor.
I suppose, yeah.
You know, who also, like the Coat Milat that he belongs to, they're also attracted to hopeless causes.
Yes, well, there's a lot of that going on. It goes, gels well with Picard.
Yeah.
You think of me as a vigilante, fine. Ranging is my job. It's not saving the galaxy. It's helping people who have no one else to help them.
And she's not really interested in what's going on. She's fine with being dropped off at Free Cloud, where their path leads them.
Mm-hmm.
But then Picard holds a little recruitment speech and throws her words back at her.
Yeah.
Who are you looking for?
Someone who has no one else to help her. Someone who will likely die if I don't.
Because he's trying to help a girl, Soji Asha, the sister of a young woman that he met, from whatever danger is pursuing her. And Bruce Maddox is an invaluable clue.
Yes.
And I'll take another one of these.
We get some of the most natural exposition delivery that I can remember seeing in a long time, because we've just got the two most charismatic characters, Raffi and Captain Rios.
She's in there with him.
Huh?
The Ranger. She's in the chateau with Picard.
Ooh, what do those two have to talk about, I wonder?
Seems like they know each other.
I don't think so. Not back when I knew him anyway.
Oh, she's that Ranger.
Yeah, she's the ex-Borg.
The ex-Borg Ranger. Fenris Ranger. From the Delta Quadrant. It just keeps building and building. And then he's like, oh, and I somehow completely forgot that Jean-Luc is also ex-Borg.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's a wild world.
JL, as he is occasionally referred to.
Yes, by Raffi.
Yeah.
Her affectionate name for her former commanding officer.
Mm.
We see Agnes reminiscing about her relationship with Bruce Maddox, watching an old video where she's questioning him about the fact that he's replicated all the ingredients for cookies and still insists on baking them.
Burning them, setting them on fire. No, I'm not setting them on fire. I'm baking them because I don't like the cookies from the replicator.
Hey, respect.
No, yeah, absolutely.
It's fun to do.
Yeah, that too.
And also, if you get them fresh from the oven and they're still just a little bit gooey...
I'm sure that the replicator can do that.
Are you sure, though?
I don't know.
Like, we've only seen it on television, and when we watched it on The Next Generation, we just imagined that it was perfect. More and more, I imagine, like, what if it's just a sort of crunchy, bioprinted nutrient slurry and you get a little scent cup?
Okay, yes.
That you tear the plastic lid off and you sort of smell the various scents and you're like, oh, this is a lovely steak that I'm having.
You've been listening to the episode of that we aired today, actually.
And also, like, it's the same one. Like,
right.
They don't randomize the ingredients. Like, I'm pretty sure that they scanned in.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
One steak or one cookie.
Yeah, and that's the one you always get.
Not to like that cookie.
Yeah, this is very true.
Right, if it's just not chewy enough or whatever. Okay, they're approaching Free Cloud, specifically Stardust City, a lawless place or...
Space Vegas.
It's Spagus, yeah, yes. It absolutely is.
Are we sure it's not just a wretched hive of scum and villainy? Because it sounds to me just like it's a wretched hive of scum and villainy. Like, this is exactly what Obi-Wan warned us about. What are we doing here, guys?
And they're assaulted by holographic advertisements that pop up all throughout their ship.
Yes. Very personally tailored.
Yes.
Because Jean-Luc gets an ad for high tea at some establishment. Who's the one who gets bothered by the punchy robot?
Oh, yeah, that's Agnes.
Oh, it's Agnes, yeah.
And they all tell her, no, you got to punch his head off to make him go away.
I'm not a punching person.
Off you go. And she does this, like, she gets a round of applause when she succeeds and does a little boxing move. Rios gets bothered by the Red Bolian, a species that are not normally red, for repairs to his ship, and Raffi gets an invitation to a coffee shop, essentially.
Yes.
And Elnor
is a bit upset that he doesn't get one.
I didn't get one.
Maybe they don't have anything catering to...
Also, what kind of technology... I mean, this is like pop-up ads are intrusive, but how the fleck do they manage to get that into the holographic display suit of the ship? That sounds like some serious level security breaching.
Yeah, I mean, maybe like Rios has just been delinquent with the security patches.
Yeah,
he's not up to his ad blockers.
Clearly not.
Subscription not has expired.
Yes. Raffi has hacked her way into the local database where she is getting information from who's doing what.
And we learned the term facer.
Oh, yes.
Interfacer. Yeah. A specific type of broker.
Kind of like a fixer, as in, you know?
In the sense of Cyberpunk,
right,
2077,
yes.
The excellent game, yeah. And their job is as a go-between between two major players that don't really trust one another.
Yeah.
Their job is to set up a meeting. And then potentially a deal can be made.
Broker a deal, yes.
Yeah.
Somehow they learn that the deal is being made with the Romulans.
Yes.
I'm not entirely sure how they figure that out. Like, it must be, someone's security must be really bad if that's on the public net.
Well, it is on the Facers Guild.
Right. Even then, that seems like a very stupid thing to do. But, you know.
I mean, how else do you get a deal brokered? Like, I want to make a deal with the Tal Shiar.
Yeah.
I need a facer who can do that. So... Here's the job posted.
Fair. Okay, yeah. I mean, I guess Bejazzled did put that ad out there.
Bejazzle is her name.
I like Bejazzle better.
She does look like that. But then Seven has an idea.
We trade. Give Bejazzle something she wants in exchange for Maddox. Something she'll find irresistible.
Like what?
Like me.
And, yeah. this probably should have clued Jean-Luc in that, like, something was up.
It should have.
Yeah.
But he really wasn't paying that close attention to other people's problems at this point. Because she says, me.
Yeah.
I'm f***ing irresistible. And yes, Seven of Nine, you absolutely are.
For more than just your parts.
Lovely parts, though they may be. We're treated to a gorgeous flyover scene of Space Vegas.
I think it looks a bit smallish, actually. I was expecting it to be bigger.
It's just our city.
Yeah.
It's just Stardust City. We're treated to a whole host of references to past Star Trek properties.
Oh, yes.
You have Mr. Mott's hairstyling salon, named for the Bolian barber aboard the Enterprise D.
Oh, yes.
Whom Captain Picard once impersonated. He claimed to be Mr. Mott when he had to sort of die hard his way through a hostile takeover of his ship. Oh,
yes.
No, I'm just the barber.
Mm.
The bald barber. Yeah, well, Bolians are bald to begin with, so it's not that much of a stretch.
Yes.
And, of course, Quark's bar.
Yes. In front of which, Rios is beamed down, who is wearing a fantastic outfit.
Right?
Yes. It's like a zoot suit, but then in space.
Yeah, he's like Son of the Mask with a gigantic hat, and we're treated to heist editing.
Yes.
Where you see the heist being performed and the preparations being made, cutting back and forth.
There's a lot of cutbacks here. First, we get the shot of Rios on the planet, and then the scene where he's being dressed and how everybody weighs in a little bit on his outfit and how he has to change his demeanor. Because he has to be a wheeler and a dealer. And, like, I'm sorry, but your usual surly personality won't work here.
No,
you're going to have to get a little
panache.
Yeah.
Raffi, the seasoned security officer, intelligence officer, is able to brief everyone because these facers...
You're playing go-between. You want to stand out. You don't want anyone mixing you up with the other side.
Yes, exactly. Which I thought was a fantastic excuse for some f***ing wicked costumes. Because he thinks he's doing a great job, but, like, everyone says you need more panache.
Yeah.
And Seven says...
You need a feather in your hat.
And by God, does he get a feather.
Yes.
Cosplayer Brain Greg here. I just have to say that... Oh, this costume is so extra and ridiculous with all the rings, the cigar, the fur coat, but I just love, like, the squares on his suit, the patterning. It's so beautiful and so extra. I don't think I'd ever want to wear it, but I kind of want to wear it just once, just because, it's so fantastic and extra, and I love it.
He gets scanned, and he needs to talk to Mr. Vux.
Mr. Vup.
Vup, sorry.
Look, okay, now here's my thing. You can come up with a completely new nickname for someone.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's cool to make jokes about what somebody's name is. So I'm actually going to, you know, Bajazzle is a little bit important. We don't make fun of people's
she's
names.
A bad guy.
We make fun of people.
Okay.
For the choices that they make.
She's a bad guy, though.
Yeah, she very much is, actually. Whew. This nightclub looks fun.
Yeah. It's the same club as before, but now it is hoppin'.
Yeah. See the blonde David Bowie lookalike with the holographic wings?
Yes.
Holographic and angel wings? It's
and
so
someone
cool.
else with a halo comes walking by.
Oh.
And there's little drones flittering about slowly.
Amazing hairstyles.
Yeah. Rios walks over to the bar where it is Elnor's long-lost brother who is attending bar.
I know. He's cute, isn't he?
Yeah.
Makes no eye contact.
No. Does a magnificent eye roll, though.
Yeah. When Rios asks for a...
Attempt TB Lagoon if it's not too much bother. And a game tablet.
Named after a particular body of water in Risa.
Oh.
So another fun reference to the past.
With two umbrellas.
Yeah. And could you let Mr. Vup know that I'm here? Oh, Mr. Yeah. Vup already knows.
Yeah. Mr. Vup turns out to be the Reptiloid.
Yes, a beta Anari with exceptional sense of smell.
Who can smell lies?
Also what you had for dinner, and the last person you had sex with.
If they're not the same thing.
Now, fortunately, back on the ship, Rios gets jabbed.
Yep.
With some slow release, you know, just some, a little of this, a little of that, and it should kick in right when you need it.
Yep.
So I guess it's adrenaline triggered, because you see him facing Mr. Vup, and there's a flash of fear on his face, and then just...
You see this beatific smile spread over his face.
And he sort of squints, much like little Pip here is squinting right now. It's like, what's going on again?
I can't see because she's...
Just trust me, she's having a lovely little snooze over there.
Yeah.
Very well deserved after being such a very, very courageous girl in the face of the unfortunate medical necessities of being a young cat.
Yes.
But while Mr. Vup is satisfied that Rios is telling the truth, that he's a facer.
Beta blockers, anxiolytics, benzos, delayed release. Rafi's home cooking, honey.
Yeah.
It's like, this is basically the ultimate chill cocktail that she gives him.
Which you're kicking right when you need it, and it
goes
sure
like,
does.
Ah, I mean, I know that feeling, you know? Like when you're having a bit of a panic attack and you drop a Xanax and then suddenly it's like, ah.
And he drops a surprise on Mr. Vup. No, I'm not here representing the Tal Shiar. I'm actually here representing an interested third party.
And he goes, like, immediately draws his gun and is like...
I'm not a fan of surprises.
And you couldn't possibly have anything to offer that's more interesting than the payment of the Tal Shiar.
Yeah.
Well, I've got this little hologram.
You don't want us to go back on a deal with the Tal Shiar. That would be suicide.
But it is an awfully tempting little hologram that he's got.
So many intact and functioning Borg parts in a single specimen. She would be extremely valuable.
And it's a scan of specifically 7 of 9, who has more implants in her body than Vup thinks possible. Well, that's because most of their victims have been people who were emborgified and assimilated here in the Alpha Quadrant, whereas she was quite a young girl.
When she was assimilated, is the word indeed.
This is the scene where back on La Sirena, Elnor realizes...
Everybody's behaving as if there was somebody else.
Yes.
Oh, God. And it took...
Picard has meanwhile got his Frenchman outfit on. He's wearing his little beret. He's got a scar on his cheek and he's got an eye patch that he like flips up and down for a little bit.
I thought that I looked appropriately sinister.
Sinister.
He does a horrible French accent.
This is perhaps a little callback to an original concept for Jean-Luc Picard back in 1987 when The Next Generation was being filmed. Well, we have a French captain. Should he have a French accent? And I wonder if maybe Patrick Stewart put on such a terrible French accent that they decided not to.
I mean, this is almost allo levels of French accent what we're dealing with here.
Yeah, I love it. I love it because he's clearly having so much fun with it. Because he's such a camp little guy. Sir Pat Stu.
Yeah.
He relishes life. He's a fantastic comedic performer. And getting to let that rambunctious child out of its cage.
Yes, and he stands there like talking up to Vux about
what a horrible person she is. She is vile. She is disgusting.
She is not one of the new ones. The Borg entered her. She was a jeune fille. You are going to have to dice her up to get it all out.
And Elnor has been coached to You know what? Just be Elnor, but Elnor who doesn't talk.
Yes.
That's what you were going to pretend to be. Okay, I'm going to be Elnor who doesn't talk.
Yes.
He does a lovely pose where he yells, Aguardiente!
He does a very good Legolas in this scene, basically just stand in the background and don't say anything. So.
Yeah, just be gorgeous.
Yeah.
Just stand there and just have lovely hair and just be gorgeous and just kick ass. Gosh, I'm a huge fan of Elnor.
Mm.
For obvious reasons. And Seven is brought to the fore. She's got her handcuffs on.
Yep.
Fake handcuffs that she knows how to remove.
I hope you find what you came out here for.
And I sincerely wish the same for you.
But they're not being joined by their intelligence officer.
Mm. No, because she has her own plans. She's been scrolling through some data and spying on a person through some public camera or something.
Yep.
It's not entirely clear who this person is, but it quickly becomes so as she goes to visit him.
We see the name is Juan Gabriel.
Yes.
And there's a tender goodbye
between
Picard and Raffi. Like, this will be so much harder without your expertise.
Yeah.
But she has things that she needs to do.
Yes, and she ends up at a reproduction clinic.
Yeah, reproductive health services, a maternity clinic.
Yes. Where there is a man sitting on a couch, clearly waiting.
She approaches him with her bag in hand, and she does a few double takes before she decides to really approach him. And this is a really difficult scene.
Yeah.
This young man is her son.
Yeah, he goes, Mom.
Wow. Here?
And we discover that they've had a difficult relationship.
Yes. Apparently, Mom was addicted to something.
Substance abuse.
Yeah.
And also her obsession with a conspiracy.
Yes, the Mars conspiracy.
The attack on Mars. Tell me how it wasn't really the sense. Honey, tell me about the Conclave of Eight. Tell me what was worth ignoring me and Dad until we hardly recognized you. Why you abandoned us for some crackpot tin hat conspiracy.
It wasn't crackpot!
Recognizable, I'm sure, to very, very many people. In my family, I recognize a lot of this as well. Also, like, her very earnest attempt to offer herself to him, essentially. Uh-huh. Like, she's really trying not to pressure him.
Yeah.
She desperately wants his love. She desperately wants his forgiveness.
And he is not in the mood to make amends.
No. And he shows it, like, even though she says, like, she's clean, regardless of whatever she says, he can push her buttons and she'll still snap at him that conspiracy is real.
Yeah. She's like, but this wasn't a conspiracy. There's actually something going on. And that turns him a little bit angry. Like, it basically tells him that she is, hasn't changed.
Yeah.
Despite even if she may or may not, but he still sees the things in her that didn't gel well with him.
The very fact that she's here.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even that she hunted him down. She just happened to come across him while she was pursuing one of her crackpot theories.
Yeah.
And we briefly meet either a Vulcan or a Romulan woman.
Yeah.
I think she's Romulan based on her haircut and skin tone. But I'm not sure, which is his partner, who's they're having a baby together.
Hey, pal, baby. This is my mother, Raffaella. She was just passing through. I guess she had a second.
Hello. It's wonderful to meet you. Will you be staying a while?
No. Like I said, she's just passing by.
Now we get to see Miss... what's her name again?
Bejazel.
Bejazel, thank you. Yeah, now I've got Bejazel in my head, so I can't... Like,
okay, well, Bejazel. Okay. I also know that you struggle with names, and I don't want to make it more difficult for you than strictly necessary. And we find out that everyone has been deceived because Bejazel immediately recognizes Seven and calls her Annika.
Yeah.
Which was her given name at birth.
Mm.
Before she and her parents were discovered by the Borg in the Delta Quadrant.
And we learn that, she knew about this, and that's why she's coming to play along. And she basically, without much ado, says, like, oh, I'm here to kill you.
Yeah.
Mr. Vup and the bodyguards all draw weapons.
To little avail, because Seven is very quick, and she's got her hands on Bejazel's neck. Elnor pipes up.
Are we still pretending?
Yes. Well, clearly, because you're talking, which we're told not to. But
considering how long it takes him to pick up on these clues, I think everyone's quite safe. And Picard, very pointedly, he lifts his eye patch.
No, Elnor. I think everyone has finally stopped.
What's it? Agnes is having a bit of a panic attack on the...
La Sirena.
La Sirena, yes.
Yes, because she's been left with the responsibility of beaming everybody out when they activate their pattern enhancer.
It's like, oh, it's easy. Like, yeah, does this work?
Does it work?
Yeah, oh, it's easy. Just, like, do the slidey things. And like O'Brien always makes a big fuss about it, how much of a specialized, complicated task. You really, you only have to do the push the things up and then it'll...
I know, it's so, so easy. All you have to do is select your targets.
It is more of an art than a science.
And...
No.
Over the course of I'm sorry. I didn't want like I was kind of
the digital conveyor.
Yes. Galaxy Quest. Yes. The best Star Trek film in many people's opinion.
Yes.
Okay, I'm so sorry. I messed up on that too. I totally failed you there cuz I was trying to find what it was that you were talking about, because I was like, "Oh, I know that line. What's that line from? I don't remember what episode, I don't remember what movie." So I started to look through our files. And I just completely missed that it was Galaxy Quest. I'm so sorry, Kate. That was a good reference. You deserve props for that reference.
Even while Seven has some traumatizing memories of the suffering that she saw her child.
Yeah.
He was the closest thing to kin that she had. Because, like her, Icheb had grown up in the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah.
They'd both been taken by the Borg.
Because as it turns out...
They'd met her on Fenris. She was posing as one of us, as someone trying to help.
Not only does Seven blame Bejazel, she also blames, of course, herself for trusting Bejazel. They must have been close, perhaps intimate, considering that Bejazel knows her born name.
Yeah. Picard tries to talk Seven out of it.
Murder is not justice. There is no solace in revenge. You have had your humanity restored to you. Don't squander it now.
A standpoint that he's taken... many times before, and he's always been right in.
Yeah. Vup, in the meantime, tries to do a sneaky. He's got this little foldy-out wrist shooter.
Yeah, beautiful little weapon. It goes really, really fast. Blink and you'll miss it. But fortunately, despite Raffi's home cooking, Rios does not blink and he does not miss.
He has been hanging out by the bar, like he took his leave from the proceedings after everybody was introduced.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, shoots Vup in the back.
And Bejazel makes an offer.
Maddox for my life.
Which Seven grudgingly accepts.
Yeah.
Hey, look at the math of it is all I'm saying. You found her once, odds are, you'll do it again.
Picard says to Agnes, who is a first-time beamer-upper,
yes.
Five to beam up.
Yep.
Which f***ing five?
Well, presumably the ones with the pattern enhancer.
Okay, is everybody holding on to each other?
And like, no.
One of them's Maddox.
Yeah, like, no, this is a long-term gripe that I have, which I...
I'm going to be on... Like, I honestly thought that was going to be your warp core.
No.
I didn't want to spoil it for you.
No, I've already like made this point before.
You can't relitigate.
We had a recent episode where it was actually correctly named.
Strange New Worlds.
That's the one, yeah.
From Strange New Worlds.
Where someone actually correctly like gives useful information to the officer who's supposed to do the beaming out.
I know. Fortunately, Agnes is natural.
Yeah,
everyone's straight up aboard. Maddox is delighted to see Agnes, but he's quickly oxted down to the medical bay,
to the infirmary,
because gosh, they did a number on him. And Seven is left behind with Picard. She takes her leave.
Yes, she gives him a get out of jail free card, like the American police officers sometimes give to their friends and family.
Yikes! Okay. I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh, yes. They kind of have these business cards, which is kind of like a friend of the police. And it's basically, cops hand those out to friends and family. And then when they're pulled over, then they kind of like show them that card. And
yeah, when you show your ID.
And then the other police officer goes, oh, okay. No. It's like, we have to go easy on this one.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a bit of a scandal.
Well, in this case, it's a help, come get me card, which, you've seen before, because in Nepenthe, at the very end, the side plot on the artifact, that's the little thing that Elnor has, where he calls for help.
Okay.
She doesn't take payment, but she says,
I will take two of your phasers, if that's all right. The vigilante could always use a couple more.
You can see Picard hesitating, and he's like, okay. Okay, I suppose.
And she grabs two phaser rifles, which looks really cool.
Yeah, well.
Not entirely sure how she like cocks and reloads what is clearly a two-handed weapon, holding it in only one hand.
You don't have to cock a...
I don't know. Charge, activate, disengage the safeties.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I gotta be honest here. I can understand why Seven enjoys a phaser rifle in the hand, because I like my phaser rifle a lot. I swear, guys, this isn't me threatening you. I just enjoy holding the phaser rifle. Oh no! This is not coming out good for me at all.
There's a really, really touching moment where Seven asks Picard, like, when you were brought back from the Borg, like, did you get your humanity back?
Yes.
And she asks, all of it?
Nah, and then, yes, the predictable answer is no.
No, which I think is really, really valid.
Yeah.
But we're both working on it, aren't we?
Every damn day of my life.
I was going to say, he and Seven uniquely share, but of course they don't.
Well, lots of ex-Borg, I guess.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. There's Hugh and there's all the people who've been helped by the reclamation program.
Uh-huh.
She beams back down to the nightclub.
Hi.
Opens fire. And Bejazel asks her, like, why didn't you just shoot me to begin with?
Picard still thinks there's a place in the galaxy for mercy. I didn't want to disillusion him.
Like, she recognizes in him, he's Don Quixote.
Yeah.
Right? And much like Sancho Panza, realizing too late how precious it is to have someone who believes in a better world, because they alone could make the world better. And you'd much rather live in their world than the real one. So you kind of want to protect them from it. And that's what she's doing. But
somebody out here ought to have a little hope.
She still absolutely f***ing vaporizes Bejazel.
Well, hang on. So this, it's a bit of a weird scene. Because first she shoots the two bodyguards. Because Vup is already dead.
Yeah, the rest of the guests
everybody runs away fleeing. And then there's just a lot of standing, staring at each other, talking. Then Seven accuses Bejazel of...
You're stalling, Jay. Your second security wave will be here in less than 5 seconds.
And she's the one who isn't shooting her.
I guess she was giving Bejazel an opportunity to talk because she knows, hey, the exact timing for the next wave of security officers.
Right, which isn't, they're late because definitely more than 5 seconds. But.
And Bejazel has gambled that she didn't know that and was trying to stall for that instead of making more productive use of her final living moments.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know, repenting?
Yeah, well,
but fortunately,
she didn't seem to type.
Then we don't get an episode called Repente.
Oh, God.
Yeah, anyway, she is f***ing phaser to death.
This is for him.
Yeah, phaser set to max. Also interesting how it shoots red there and... Or does it? It shoots red when it disintegrates her. And then she sets it to blue as she is... Shooting all the other, which I think was a very interesting shot because you see a little bit of some people running in, and then the entire rest of the shot is just of Seven shooting, and you don't see anybody getting shot. It's just her walking toward the camera with the camera
dollying back, and a few shots going over her shoulder and exploding against the wall behind her. She looks so cool. Hey, maybe this is where she wanted two guns. Let one cool down and fire the other. Maybe it's Mass Effect 1 rules.
Okay, well, don't know how phases work like that.
I don't know either. She's got pulse phases, like it's, and she fights her way free.
Okay, on board the La Sirena.
The La Sirena is redundant.
La Sirena, then, okay.
Okay. Mr. Sergeant Major Saab. Maddox is being tended to and questioned by Picard while Agnes drops some eaves nearby.
Also, I'm going to
where are you going?
The name of the ship is La Sirena.
Yes.
So it is the La Sirena.
Well, hold on. Okay, no. That would be valid, except since Voyager, Star Trek has kind of stopped talking about the starship name.
Right.
Right? So in The Next Generation, it was the Enterprise, and DS9 was the Defiant, but Voyager has always been Voyager.
Right.
And in Star Trek Enterprise, they also talked about, I'm beaming up to Enterprise.
Okay.
Right? And in Strange New Worlds as well. So they kind of like, that's a 60s to 90s thing. And since then...
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking of real life. Generally, it's referred to as the ship name.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
The Millennium Falcon.
Also, the Missouri, when you're talking about like the Theodore Roosevelt, when you're talking about the carrier.
Right,
Yeah.
I'm also thinking of, okay, this is a deep cut and you're going to have to speak a Germanic language.
Yeah.
There is a swimming pool. It's named after a person called De Miranda.
Yeah.
But De, being a Spanish prefix, right, because it's a Spanish name, happens to also be the gendered article.
Oh,
in Dutch.
So it's het de Miranda bot.
It's het
de Miranda.
De Miranda bot.
I always thought it was...
Because bot is swimming pool, and that's a het word. And,
and I always thought it was Nerva Minerva, but I now only realize it's Miranda.
Maybe it was named after... Anyway, you don't beam up to the Miranda. You beam up to Miranda.
Yeah, okay. In sickbay, the professor is not well.
Yeah.
He's being tended by the medical bed, and Picard is kind of like, oh, I'm happy that I finally got to meet you and tell us all about it.
Yes, because he wants to know about the work that he's been doing on synthetic life.
Yeah.
Positronic, artificial life, and how did you wind up in the clutches of Bejazel? Well, she approached me and she funded it.
Yeah.
So he does the thing that moribund, you know, about-to-die characters
tend to do,
which is, yeah, like, drop a lot of hints that you really want to ask more about, and then, oh, je suis fatigué, I'm so tired.
Admiral, he's barely stable. He's to rest.
Understood.
I love this medical bay, and, like, outside is just, like, the mess hall, because La Sirena is completely open plan.
Yeah.
And this is just all in the downstairs area.
I was wondering where they were hiding that, but... Yeah. It's probably under the bridge, I guess.
Under the bridge, I think, is right, yeah.
Mm. And, like, Jean-Luc's holo suite is somewhere else as well.
Yep, on the top floor, off to the side.
She's on the artifact. The artifact? You mean... not the captured Borg cube?
Now, it's weird, I know, to be watching it out of order, but, hey, such is life. Yes. We get these recommendations.
No, absolutely, absolutely.
I mean, it's kind of weird, like, taking chapters 7 and 5 out of a 10-chapter book and just reading them in a different order, but, you know...
Yes, I mean, especially since Picard is so serial.
Serialized,
that's the word.
Super serial.
Yes. Super serial.
Oh, yes, Sung gets name-dropped.
Oh, yes, of course.
He's working with Sung, and he gets a few other clues before he's sent away, and Agnes murders her f***ing boyfriend.
Yes, she basically turns off the hemoglobulin repair systems, much to the chagrin of the emergency holographic doctor.
What is the nature of your psychiatric emergency?
Which, as he did before, yeah.
Yeah, recognizing that she's having an anxiety attack, and then, oh, shit.
Yeah. Oh, this. Yeah, we really need to
just
turn...
like in that other episode, where he just gets summoned first, and then, oh, there's a patient. Yeah. Oh, I've got to take care of this.
And she just, like, shuts him off just like she did the first time.
There's a high risk of critical organ failure unless hematic micro-repair treatment is resumed.
Deactivate EMH.
And she's crying over this man she's killing. She's so, so sorry. And she says that...
I wish you knew what I know. I wish I didn't know what I know. I wish they hadn't shown me.
And he's dead.
Yeah. And this young woman... Agnes Jurati, who's come with us on this adventure, the scientist who just enjoyed her little bento box of sushi on the...
Oh, yes.
With her headphones on.
Who has now been told terrible things.
That made her want to kill someone she loved.
Yeah. And that's the end of the episode.
Anyway, yes, happy... happy episode. Yeah. Like, okay, well... Like, did I ever... Oh, yes. Look, I've got this sound effect for when we're... Yeah, when we finish talking about the episode, and then we can get into our little segment.
Okay.
Because
so, yeah, in regard of this, I mean, it's a bit of a dour episode. It's fun and cheerful in certain places, but it, like, ends and begins rather on a downer.
Yeah, absolutely. And it fitting with the sort of melancholy and the extreme emotional range of Picard, certainly in its first season.
But right, oh yeah, sorry, now I remember what I was thinking of. You were talking about how Agnes was like enjoying her bento box when she got visited by a high
Commodore
Starfleet...
O.
Right, yes, high Starfleet officer who apparently told her terrible things. And that that kind
that
of thought
mind meld
of a review of this episode that I read, which I thought was rather appropriate. It's by Katie Burt from Den of Geeks. Mm-hmm. I view the Star Trek franchise through the lens of institution as theme, and Star Trek Picard is a very topical look at what happens when the institutions we build to support us fail us in devastating, perhaps even unforgivable ways.
Whoa!
I don't love Star Trek's continued overrepresentation of toxic romantic relationship. Like, is anyone in this galaxy happy, healthy romance? Where are the Miles and Keikos of this world? Well, they had their spot of troubles, but...
Yeah, but they had our relationship that requires work, and we got to see the work, and they... I guess Hugh Culber and Paul Stamets.
Yes.
Like, despite the odd spot of death and resurrection.
Yeah,
like,
okay.
They're pretty good.
Jamal Epsikokan of Jammer's Reviews was less lyrid about it. Like,
pardon
that
us.
Being said, Starter City Rag is all wrong. This is not Star Trek. Yeah.
I'm not going to begrudge anyone for not liking it.
Well, the reason is, like, the unrelenting cynicism, the brutal torture gore, the utter lack of imagination... I didn't see a lot of that. Okay, the shocking plot reveals that seem to be motivated by the running time approaching the end of this episode more than the character inside.
Hey, have you watched Star Trek The Next Generation?
I disagree, yeah.
Come on, that is very, very in keeping.
Very true. Very true.
Yes, the grotesquerie is, and certainly, like, it's turned off people whom we know to be
avid Star Trek fans.
Yeah. But fortunately, we live in a time when there is so much Star Trek.
Yeah, not everything's for you.
Yeah, and there's nothing sort of facetious about that. You can just skip this bit of Star Trek. Because there's so much Star Trek, there's a drive for it not all to be the same, to appeal to different audiences, to try different things. And I'm on record as someone who appreciates big swings. I like a feather in the hat.
Yeah.
I don't love that Memory Alpha used... They have the policy on the pages for characters. They use as the main photo the character's last appearance.
Okay.
So for Icheb, who for years, I believe, was played by the, you know, not very excellent Manu Intriami. Instead, the character photo was him with his eye cut out.
Oh!
which is very unpleasant to look at and was not like sense. So there's a bit of kerfuffle about that.
Right, yes.
But in the same way that, like, maybe some people aren't into Prodigy. I can't imagine why, but maybe you're not. And that's totally fine.
Yeah.
But to say that something isn't Star Trek is, I think, a
yeah, that's a gross... Yeah. That's an appropriation of the all that.
Yes.
Why should... Yeah, why do you get to say? I mean, you might not find it your kind of Star Trek, but, yeah, you don't get to say this is not Star Trek.
Exactly, because Star Trek can be anything. Much in the way you explained to me ketchup can be anything. This table can be ketchup. If you grind it up into a fine paste...
Are we back on that again?
No, I'm fully supporting you.
All right, so we have a segment where we do our deleted scene. Imaginary deleted scene. Our
Captain's Log Supplemental.
Yes.
Ah, that was the one. Yes, okay. So, I mean, at first I was going to sit there and have the scene where they turn Rios's cigar into a communicator. Because, like, at one point, like, when he's standing in the bar, he's kind of like holding that cigar like he's talking into a communicator.
He kind of is, yeah.
But what I really would have loved to see is if they had sent him down to Quark's first and to have a little one-on-one with Quark, telling him coaching him on how to be sleazy. Like, yeah, we're going to do a dry run first. And then they're like, he's trying to fast talk someone in the bar. And then after it clearly fails, Quark comes wandering up to him and goes like, no,
that's not how you do it.
You're going to have to do better. Like, let me give you some pointers.
As long as you know, and here's the invoice for the pointers and the finder's fee for locating you.
There'll be two strips of gold-pressed latinum.
Oh, then my supplemental scene, I guess. Oh, in an unconventional move, it's not just from this episode. From this episode, I think there was only like a 3-second scene that was cut. Yes, my deleted scene is actually for the rest of the entire series of Picard season one.
Yeah.
Because at the very end of this episode, I think that Elnor, we get a close-up of Elnor, and he sort of whispers into his sort of shirt sleeve, they're completely fooled. They think I'm one of those people that can't lie. I've got them exactly where I need them. And then there was this whole extra other conspiracy that at the last minute they sort of cut out, no, we'll just stick with the Tal Shiar.
Right,
like we don't need the Obsidian Order and like people pretending to be Romulans. Nah, it's too complicated.
Elnor doing supplemental personal log.
Oh, hey.
Yes.
Lauren, who suggested this week's episode, thank you so much, Lauren.
Yes.
Also, either suggested or reminded us of a little segment that I think we've done before.
Yeah.
And that is to call out the MVP, the most valuable player. And it can be anyone. Like, who do you think deserves, or you were particularly impressed with? Can be the makeup, can be an actor, can be a regular, can be the director. Hey, Jonathan Frakes directed another kick-ass episode, by the way.
Next one is his as well, but I think he did two in a row in this. I happen to see in the
The
show notes. Yeah. Oh, MVP in this episode. Let me think.
Well, I'll tell you mine.
Yeah, okay, go on then.
MVP. Mr. Vup.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I just love his presence. I love that he got, like, you've got a little baddie, and you give him so much character, even though he gets, like...
I mean, I can see that, because, like, when you first see him, he is kind of played for the dumb muscle. And then when Rios goes into the bar and, like, Mr. Vup, and then it turns out that, yes, Mr. Vup is the muscle is not just muscle. He's also brain and bloodhound.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Mine. What's mine going to be? Oh, no, that's too easy.
It's not going to be the surgeon at the start, right?
No, no, God knows.
I really appreciated her tone. Where's your cortical load, buddy?
Wow!
Yes. Chilling!
Yeah. So I'd say that the emergency medical hologram, he was really funny. I love his demeanor. But I think the real prize will has to go to the emergency holograms with copies of himself. But
yeah.
Weird. His fantastic outfit and his entire demeanor and his assumed role.
Slipping into the role.
Definitely my favorite.
And then Raffi's home cooking kicking in.
I must say that Picard's very bad French accent.
Oh, also. Come on, yes, yeah. That was going to be my second. Sinister.
Yeah.
Well, I think that really was...
It is fucking cool.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, let's find out what we have in store for you next time. We have another few clues from our chief engineer.
All right.
And let's see if, based on these quotes, we can guess which episode he has selected for us for next week.
Tom Paris says, "You'd make a good barometer, Tuvok. Every time you get queasy, we got a red alert."
Okay. Okay, so Voyager.
Yeah, no, that's
good.
That
puts me at a big disadvantage.
Barometer, okay.
Janeway says, "Oh, you know the story. Girl meets boy, girl modifies boy's subroutines."
Ooh.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Holiday, doctor.
Episode.
Something with the doctor. Oh. Subroutines?
I don't know. Okay, this sounds,
One more.
The doctor says, "Gentlemen, please, love thy neighbor."
Oh,
okay.
I'm not getting any closer. Oh, no, we have one more. Well, maybe this will do it.
Janeway says, "Delete the wife."
This sounds like a holodeck episode.
Yeah, it's got to.
Yeah.
It's got to be some kind of holo novel. Oh.
I mean, that's like the doctor can join in on those. So.
It's not going to be Fairhaven, is it?
I don't know. What's...
Oh, it's with the Space Irish Holod Village.
Okay.
I wonder. Okay, let's find out.
This is Voyager Season 6, Episode 11.
Yeah.
Fairhaven.
Yes,
very good. Very good.
I think that episode's been recommended to us by a few people. Really looking forward to seeing that. But in the meantime.
The hell is this?
I'm leaving Starfleet.
Energize! What did you write this time?
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode with friends Kay and Kaki, production and editing by your chief engineer Greg, and music by Fox Amore. Join us next time for Voyager Season 6, Episode 11, Fairhaven. Visit troyoftrek.com/links to send us your recommendations, support us on Patreon, or to find us on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for listening to The Joy of Trek, and we'll see you out there.